Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting fact-filled, sometimes a touch of misinformation, hopefully not, in the Patty and Michael Show. We're renaming the show today. Going to put your name in big, huge lights at the top, and mine will be in point one font. How's Patty today?
Pretty good, and I thought it was the Michael and Patty Show.
It's been changed.
Okay.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for listening. Today, we've got a bunch of really exciting topics, things we've covered or things that Patty and I have dealt with over the course of the last week or so, and we just thought we'd bring this to your attention, and we'll go ahead. So the first topic is something that Patty and I discuss from time to time, is an agent presents an offer. The offer is an offer that's not even close to acceptable by the vendors or the owners, and Patty feels, based on her training from Jack Cotton in Cape Cod, that we should counteroffer every offer that comes in.
A good negotiator tries their best to keep the conversation going by rejecting an offer that the seller may not deem acceptable to them is closing the conversation off. So a good negotiator is able to say, hey, I want to work with you. I want to play negotiating, but you just need to get a little bit more serious in order for me to really start to participate.
And all of these depend on the situation with the listing, of course. I mean, if you've got 20 people biting at the bit that are on a waiting list to offer, you're certainly not going to tie yourself into a counteroffer with somebody that may be construed as not very serious or disingenuous, or maybe not have the financing in place when you can entertain offers from other players. If you've got a hot listing, what I like to do is just reject the offer, but have a conversation with the buyers and the sellers to find out, you know, sort of what they're looking for in both ballparks, and then provide a list, but also provide that with that list a disclaimer that says, this is not a counteroffer. This is just more of a list of things that we're looking for in the form of a asking price, deposit, closing date, inclusions, inspections, and so forth. Because sometimes I find, I don't know about you, is we'll have all these documents connected or attached to the listing in Paragon, our internal system, and then the agent doesn't even look at them. And then we're wondering, why is all this stuff on the offer to begin with?
Yeah, because those questions would have been answered. The other thing I was going to say with regards to presenting an offer, and as a buyer, you may wonder, why is the seller rejecting this offer? Why are they not working, you know, with me? Property's been on the market X amount of days. I mean, we hear this all the time. But perhaps the agent just sent a text and said, here's an offer. And they never presented the buyer's case. Who are they? What are they looking for? What do they like about the property? Why is the offer with the details structured the way it is? It's very important that the agents communicate and have a conversation. And before the buyer's agent even prepares the contract, or as they're preparing it, they really should reach out to the listing agent and find out at least one or two little nuggets that the seller is looking for, and somehow try to incorporate those into the contract, which makes the seller more inclined to want to continue the negotiation and counter back.
And we've discussed this in previous podcasts, these blind offers that appear out of nowhere from an agent that may or may not even have shown the property, and they haven't looked at the documents attached to the listing, so they go in completely unprepared. Never talk to the listing agent. They don't even ask the listing agent if the property is available, which it may or may not be. You had a point, but I have a question.
Okay.
What about this school of thought that says, oh, write them a letter. Oh, we're Billy and Jane, and we just moved here, and we've got 14 kids, and they're all 6 weeks old. We need somewhere to live because we're living out of a garbage dumpster in England for $62 a month. That was the article my father read this morning. Or was that you that read that?
Oh, that was an article that I had.
Right. Sure. So this is all included in their letter with the offer to tug at our heartstrings to get the negotiating moving here. You had a question or a point.
Well, I will answer with regards to preparing letters. I am an advocate of letters, especially if you are in a multiple offer situation, because when you, as a listing agent, when I receive 10, 15 offers across my desk, what differentiates a buyer sometimes can be that letter. It makes them stand out. It personalizes them versus it just being numbers and a closing date. And what do they want from me? Oh, they want my stools. Oh, they think they're getting my cabinets. So it becomes more of it's a person. There's a life, and it can differentiate your offer for sure. With regards to negotiating with yourself, as a seller, why would you start walking your price down too quickly when the buyer, I mean, obviously, and if you look at negotiations like an anchor, the seller sets the first anchor, the buyer sets the second anchor with their offered price, and the buyer's trying to pull the seller's anchor down, the seller's trying to pull the buyer's anchor up, and it's a bit of a game. If there is an opportunity for a negotiation to happen, it will walk itself to it, but I never advise a seller to negotiate with themselves.
And that was my biggest point. And just getting back to the letter, what you're describing is a multiple offer situation, which is probably a house in Somerset or Charlottetown that's selling to the average buyer at the average price. But would that apply unilaterally if I was offering on a $2 million home, which we sell very, very, very few of and there's no buyers for?
I don't think it would necessarily be necessary. Anytime you can prepare a letter, especially if you go through a home and you realize this home just feels like family's very important, or they have pets, or you have some sort of connection with the current homeowner, why would you not write a letter so that the seller wants to even negotiate more with you versus somebody else that's just a random Joe on the street?
Why not have one of your children draw a cartoon with crayons of them living in the house that they want mommy and daddy to buy for them?
I've never had that, but...
A good idea, isn't it?
Yeah,
we could sell these pre-made. The point of this conversation was exactly what Patty said. I've had situations, hypothetically, where you have a house that's on for $600,000, and then I get an offer for $502,000, and then the agent says to me, "Oh, the purchasers, they really want an offer. Yeah, get an offer. Just get me a counter offer," almost implying that doesn't matter what we counter offer it, they're going to sign it. So in this hypothetical real situation that I experienced, we wasted days writing up a counter offer. And then the purchaser didn't sign the counteroffer back. So the other thing is, if I do counteroffer and it's on for $600,000 and they're coming at $502,000, what message am I sending if I'm sending it back at $540,000? For all I know, they would have paid $590,000. So probably the best thing in this case is to counteroffer at $599,999. Dollar off. That's the challenge you have. It all depends on the situation.
Okay, and just one last note with regards to counter offers. So many buyers, and this just pertains to Prince Edward Island, so many buyers will receive the counter offer. We come to an agreement, and then they notice the agreement still has the price, the original offered price. So the way our contracts are set up is the buyer owns the agreement of purchase and sale. Sellers cannot go in there and start striking things off and making modifications and changes. Any changes or anything that the seller doesn't agree to has to be done in either the counter or an amendment form. So if we're
initialed.
Or at the very least, if it's just one thing.
But it gets sloppy and then there's no time delineation.
Yeah, so just know that, yes, you're going to see the original, and again, most cases, we're just talking that the price is usually a point of negotiations here. Most times, we would be negotiating on price, majority of the time, and the original price, yes, will still remain within the contract, but because the counter precedes the agreement of purchase and sale. It's whatever is on the counter or any further amendments referencing the original agreement of purchase and sale.
Well covered.
Good.
In your opinion. Moving on to the next one. I find, I don't know about you, but the more agents that there are when things become good, the less and less trained they are, because brokers can't train 70 agents like they could 12. And what happened recently with Patty was funny in a twisted and sick way. And this is one of two incidences that came from the exact same office that's been around for decades.
Well, I just want to let our buyers and sellers, and if there are any real estate agents listening to this, we cannot give lockbox codes. When we're a listing agent, we do not give lockbox codes to the public.
For any access information.
Absolutely.
Alarm codes, keypad codes, hidden under a rock key codes.
None of that is released, only to a fellow realtor, a licensed real estate agent, realtor for us on Prince Edward Island.
That are bonded and insured.
Correct. I have had recently an agent who was away, I guess vacationing, and their buyer was outside of a property listing of mine and had asked if the agent contacted me just via text and said, like to get into this property. I called up the agent and had a conversation saying, typically the seller wanted 24 hours notice, you know, is your client's pre-qualified? Yes, we just want to schedule a showing. And I said, okay, so when are you wanting to get in? She goes, well, right now. And I said, oh, okay, so you're looking to get in right now. She ended up disclosing that her buyers were at the property, and since she was off island, she just wanted to give them the code so they could quickly run through. And I immediately, first, I just felt ill for a second that I couldn't believe that someone would even agree to give the code.
Just be honest. You swore at them. You gave them a bunch of profanities, and then you slapped your phone through it. You threw your phone.
I did let her broker know that this was something that they were going to do, and maybe perhaps they weren't aware. Please know we do not give lockbox codes. If you're a buyer, your agent should not be giving you the code to go through a house on your own. There's just so much that is wrong in that. Safety issues, there could be cameras, you could be accused of stealing things. The sellers now, it might be missing items. You don't know your buyers. You could assume there's so many reasons and it's just not allowed based on our rules and regulations.
If a purchaser is dealing with a real estate agent, that real estate agent needs to vet that purchaser to know that they're serious buyers, that their financing is in place, they just haven't filled out a form on the internet, that when they're showing the house, that everyone that's involved in that buying decision is present, so it doesn't turn into two or three showings. We need to make sure that they're ready to write an offer that day or a reasonably close timeline to that showing, that they're ready to go. We want to make sure that they don't have a house to sell. If that's something that the vendor, because you've already had a conversation with the listing agent, doesn't want to see an offer, condition to sell a house, SOBP, as discussed before. We should know who those buyers are in an effort to not waste the vendor's time. And in an ideal world, we should have a buyer's contract signed as well. Would you agree with that?
Or I would agree.
Amend anything?
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
You said.
I have a beautiful house. Let's say it's on the golf course or the water, to be ambiguous. And it's been on the market for years. And every 6 months, I change agents because I, the vendor, know that there's a miracle agent that's going to sell my ugly, overpriced house. Is that going to work?
No, they do think there is a miracle agent out there. Now, I understand if you don't feel you're getting the service from your agent, you don't like the marketing material, perhaps they've not given a really good overview, story, lifestyle on your property, fine.
If I inject a comment as Joe Blow, home seller.
Okay.
My house is the best in the world. It's the best designers, the best views. I have a golf course that backs onto the ocean in Miami, even though it's in PEI. And even though I've overpriced it by $700,000, you should be able to sell it by marketing it to the right people.
Have you been told in an honest, black and white, here's what your property is actually worth?
Patty Castle was through this house not 16 years ago when she took the original listing, and she told me what the market value was, not her opinion, and I didn't listen to her. And 16 years later, I'm on to my 17th agent. That's the miracle agent mentality. Changing agents isn't going to change the market. It doesn't change your $300,000 bungalow into $900,000. Marketing is really important, and that should be the basis when you look and hire an agent. But it's not going to change the market, typically.
No, it doesn't. By selecting a different agent, it's not going to increase the value of your home. The home is what it's worth. Yes, everyone thinks their property is unique and, you know, there's nothing else like it. And if there was a miracle agent out there, and I'm sure you would agree, Michael, I'd co-list everything with
them. I'd sell all my properties co-listed with miracle agent. They don't exist. And there's stupidity of switching agents every 6 months. And you always notice there's a delay because it will be off for 6 months and boom, new miracle agent's been assigned. And in this case, you know, they're turning what could have been a 2 to 3 year process, which in PEI is legitimate for a higher end home, into 12 years.
Yes.
We've done the studies. If you were listed with Patty Castle from the beginning and she showed you a listing presentation of what she was going to do as a vehicle to market and sell your property for the most amount of money in the least amount of time, you should have stuck with her because she would have sold that property. Switching agents and raising the price every 6 months and putting 6 to 8 month gaps in between agents isn't going to sell that property. Patty's the expert here. Listen to Patty. She doesn't need your opinion.
Well, your realtor will let you know, but a lot of people will assume it's like stale bread. We need to take it off. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I find one of the reasons, too, that sellers will change realtors is because much the same as a relationship. When you first start your relationship, it's all new and it's exciting and it's fresh and you're on this honeymoon phase. And then as the listing kind of draws out and as the relationship turns into a long-term relationship, well, the parties aren't as excited to hang out with one another anymore. And if you're not keeping that high level of enthusiasm and excitement for this listing, the seller starts to feel like, you know what? I don't think you're interested in selling. I don't feel the excitement and the enthusiasm you had when you first showed up at my doorstep. I think I need someone else that's excited about selling my house. Do you not find that
overpriced house?
Sure, overpriced house. But that's what they feel and think. The house will sell itself. If somebody is looking in... If it's marketed properly, well, they're looking for X amount of bedrooms, X amount of square footage within a certain age, location, size. If all the criteria is there, yes, if your marketing sucks and your pictures are terrible and, you know, the buyer, as they're going through the process, will end up clicking past it. So yes, I agree. Marketing is very important. But if you feel that you have a very good marketing representation on your property and there's a good lifestyle story, your agent's responsive, it's just going to take time.
And that is what you need to explain as a listing agent from the beginning. And both Patty and I do show them the market data that a house that's worth X number of dollars typically takes X days, months, or years to sell. And it's very difficult to change that stat. Moving along to the next exciting topic, we're looking at declaring value of contents, typically on cottages. Why would it be important if I'm more for a seller than a buyer? It works with both, but it's more important immediately from the seller's standpoint to declare the value of the contents. If there's a large list, for instance, I'm buying a $450,000 waterfront home and or cottage, and I'm getting everything right down to the knives, spoons, forks, and towels. Why would it be important as a vendor to declare that in an offer?
As a vendor to declare it in an offer or within the listing?
Within an offer. They could put it in the listing as well, preemptively, but ultimately the offer is all that matters.
Well, I'm not 100% sure because I have a different train of thought. So
when you go to sell a cottage and it's fully loaded, it's got all kinds of stuff, the first thing your accountant's going to say is, what did you declare the value of the contents to be? Typically, contents of a cottage might be between 5 and 10%, newer home maybe 15 or 20. We're talking cottages here. It's a $400,000 cottage. Let's say there's, $25,000 in contents. Where this plays in is when you get into your capital gains on that, because it's not your primary residence, or maybe you're an American citizen, you don't live in Canada, so you're required to immediately file a tax return, whereas a Canadian is not. We've talked about withholding taxes in the past for non-Canadian residents. Best thing to do is determine that value when you write the offer. I'm offering this, I'm declaring the value of the contents to be this. Or if that's not done, and it won't be, from the vendor standpoint, you've already had a conversation with your accountant because Patty and I represent you, preferably, and we've told you, talk to your accountant, worst case, talk to CRA. If you don't have an accountant, put a number on that contents because it's a lot easier to negotiate when everyone's all emotionally involved in trying to land this awesome waterfront property that Patty and I have recently listed. Then down the road where they're going, why do you want to declare the value? And then they talk to their accountant and their accountant say, no, don't make it 25, make it 50. That's where it plays in.
Okay, so I understand what you are saying. If it's a secondary home, cottage, especially if you're not...
Wouldn't even have to be secondary. It could be a brand new home, $1 million, downtown Charlottetown. It's a good idea to assign a value of that contents for capital gain reasons when you go to sell it. Because they depreciate at different values as well.
Can I ask, so is this being listed with all contents included?
It doesn't matter because it's whatever's on the offer. It was listed without the contents, then they made an offer with the contents. So the contents are included on the purchase and sale.
Okay, at that point in time, which is where I was just trying to follow along with you. What I do when I typically list a property where the seller has conveyed an interest in, we'll sell everything, I do tell them, I agree along with you, I do ask, establish a price on, here's market value. That's what I can do. I'm not a furniture store appraiser or anything. So here's the value of your house or cottage. If you are looking to include your contents, please come up with a number. We can do one of two things. We can keep the contents separate and offer it, you know, maybe make mention of it in the overview and say can come, you know, fully furnished at an additional cost without getting into numbers, because it depends on what the buyer's looking to request as part of the inclusions. Or you can incorporate that price in and just say, if this structure sold at X amount of dollars and they've requested everything, would you be in agreement with this? But I would never write a listing, because I've been advised not to many years ago by lenders and, you know, financial institutions. The second you list a property and say it's turnkey, everything included, lenders do not finance furniture. You've just, in my opinion, shot the buyer in the foot, because now the lender's going to want 100% an appraisal done. We need to determine how much of what is being included in this, since you wrote down that the furniture is included within the listing.
That would become a very questionable buyer if they're getting into that sort of investigation.
Yeah.
In my opinion, if they're a good client with a good mortgage representation, they're putting down 20, 30, 50% or whatever they're putting down on a cottage.
That's your clientele, but the average
clientele. I've seen these people with other people.
The average buyer out there is they just saved up enough money to be able to make this purchase.
And that's why they're questioning them on this little expense of contents.
Yes.
We're going to move along to the next topic. Community water systems. Are they a nuisance or a big nuisance?
I would say definitely a nuisance.
I have ran into three community water systems within the last 2 weeks have just been nothing but a nuisance. What these systems are, they could be a cottage connected to the neighbor's cottage, or a cottage connected to three of the neighbor's cottages, or maybe they've got a waterfront home and them and five other homes share a common well. Where you run into the arguments and the problems is from a couple different standpoints. Number one, usually they're going to do water tests. A lot of times they only do one water test. They do not do bacteria and chemical. They just do chemical or bacteria because that's what tourism asks for. Number two, it's tested at the wellhead. It's not tested at the cottage. Number three, in the purchase and sale, now they're asking for a water test done at the cottage. So in one of my transactions, the vendors became frustrated that they had to do a water test and spend, in their words, $400 for a plumber, and the well was only 20 feet away from their cottage. In addition to that, certain banks, which we won't mention, I've had deals pulled on the day of closing because they found out that it was a central water system. So be careful when you're dealing with central water systems, water tests, financing, and what about you? Thoughts?
No, I've had a piece of land that
had agreements. That's the other thing. I had another cottage I sold. I said, where's the agreement that you can use the neighbor's well? Because the other thing about a well is it's going to use electricity. And are you paying for it? How much do you pay for it? And they're like, no, we're neighbors. We're friends. It's a handshake. Well, the lawyers aren't going to like that. So they sent me an agreement that was written 20 years ago that nobody ever signed. That's going to be a point of contention as well, right?
Oh, and that's a really good point. And something for sure, if you're buying into one of these community water systems, you should know these questions to ask to make sure that you're protected.
We go out for a barbecue one night. We're roasting marshmallows. One hits you in the forehead. And then you get all pissed off and you can control the well and you shut my water off. I don't have any legal documents. Plus, I got a giant marshmallow burn on my forehead and there's nothing you can do about it. So it should be documented.
I absolutely agree. I agree with you with this.
Do you enjoy bugs? Next topic.
No, I do not enjoy bugs. I'll answer your question.
And why is that? Would you buy a property that when you walk it, you get eaten alive from head to toe with mosquitoes, black flies, and who knows what else?
I would prefer not to be attacked by little insects and pests.
So if you're selling one of these properties, when would be a good time to do it if you wanted to misrepresent it?
I'd be listing one of those in the winter, which sounds terrible. But it's the best chance I have in order to sell that property for my seller client.
And if I was driving through that neighborhood in the middle of winter looking for waterfront homes on frozen ice front, what would I look for that would tip me off to this area may have a lot of bugs?
Now, they may not be. They'll either have boarding up an enclosed sun porch or porch area.
They've screened in rooms.
Yes, but in the winter months, the screens are going to be gone. So you're going to be looking for either just empty open space so that the wind can blow through, or they're going to have plywood.
What else?
What else would I be looking for?
Sounds like it starts with swa and ends with op.
Oh, if there's wetlands around?
Wetlands, swap. Mosquitoes can breed by the millions just in little tiny, tiny ponds, or one of my friends had a mosquito problem that was created. They found out someone had dumped a bunch of spare tires in the forest, and this is where they were breeding. Point of this is understand the bug level when you buy a place, because if you're not a bug, mosquito, and black fly enthusiast, you may want to buy somewhere else that you can actually go outside and not get eaten alive, because bugs are an issue just not on the island, but all across the entire continent.
Yes, and if you have animals, livestock, and you're concerned about...
I have two pet pigs.
My suggestion is to call a local veterinarian in that area because they're the ones that are going to be treating the animals for some have allergic reactions, some, you know, they just get attacked, so they have to have medication and that to deal with whatever skin issues they end up with. Never thought of it, but I had a veterinarian client and they brought my attention to doing this, which just seemed ingenious. So just something that you might want to keep in your back pocket as, you know, I'll call my local vet and see.
Texts. Do you ever receive these texts and or emails that say, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm an investor?
Yes, I get them.
What do you do with them before you delete them?
Well, I read them, and I have in the past said, what are you looking to invest in? What is your budget? And do you want to know their experience? Because a lot of times I find they're just brand new and they've got a little bit of money.
Or they've taken a course. That's where I see them being derived from. So they're taking a real estate course. The real estate course says, reach out to real estate agents. Tell them you're an investor. And then the real estate agent will do their due diligence and find properties over the course of the next 3 years just for you. That's the paradigm I think they're thinking that exists between investors and agents, where the reality is we get these texts every week and emails, I'm an investor. It's become so problematic that I know commercial real estate agents, I know one in Burlington, probably one of the largest commercial brokers in Canada, that he says, what are you looking for? This is what I'm looking for. I need a check for $10,000. I'll find you what you're looking for. You don't buy it. 10 grand's mine. Because there's been so many people walking into his office saying they're investors that he would do a bunch of work for, and it's turned into absolutely nothing. If you are an investor, and this is the lesson, have an in-depth conversation with the agent you elect to deal with, hopefully on an exclusive basis. Now, I know, Patty knows, that if you're texting me, chances are you're texting 100 other agents all across Canada or the States or Zimbabwe. This is not worth our time. We need to know who you are.
Yes, because what they're doing and what, unfortunately, realtors will feel like is they're going to be the ones to find that golden goose. If there is a really good investment deal to be had, chances are it's already probably gone by the time it gets to a realtor.
I wouldn't say that. That's more of a, there's this weird world of apartment building. I don't even know what you call it. There's just this weird apartment building network that thinks if an apartment's listed publicly, all my tenants will leave and it has to be a secret. And this, it's just too much cloak and dagger for me. There's all kinds of really good commercial properties out there that haven't been marketed, just like that house on the golf course waterfront that was really ugly and overpriced, that the market doesn't even realize exists. The other challenge is you've got agents that shouldn't be dipping their toes into commercial real estate because they know absolutely nothing about it.
I would agree. And that's the other thing that's with our realtor code. We have to have experience in the market that we work in. And if we don't, we need to be working closely with somebody who does have the expertise. And if you're going to, most realtors, where the money's made is in residential real estate. They don't have commercial. You are probably, in my opinion, the most highly trained, qualified realtor on PEI for commercial real estate, Michael. I don't think anyone comes close to you.
Well, I appreciate that, but I do also understand that when someone comes to me, and this happened to me within the last couple months, where someone wanted to list a commercial property and they were talking to a bunch of different agents. And they said, what's this worth? And it was a very, very odd property that there were zero comparables in the province. I said, get it appraised. And the guy says, well, you're in real estate. You should be able to tell. No, you get it appraised. You hire an appraiser that can appraise this type of property. That's what they do all day long. And the only thing is they're not the chicken in the hen house trying to buy the listing by giving you a really big number and then never selling it, working you down with price reductions every week. If you have a commercial property and you know commercial real estate, you should be talking to an appraiser to value it based on your direction, which we will not get into in this episode. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. Escalating clauses. You've heard about them, Patty. The latest little bag of tricks for purchasers, agents that gets them into court and sometimes jail.
Yes.
So an escalating clause is...
it's a clause where a buyer puts in an offer and they will say, we will pay $5,000, $10,000 more than the highest offer. The only way that a listing agent can disclose that to this particular offer is they have to essentially release the details and content of the offer that they're trying to one-up, they're trying to bid above. And we're not allowed to do that within our realtor code. So our office policy is we do not entertain escalation clauses. We do not, they can put it in. It doesn't matter what, it doesn't matter the fact that the escalation clause is in. We do not have to contact that buyer. We don't, buyer's agent, and notify them. We don't even acknowledge. It's just part of the contract. But they are not allowed or should not be allowed, at least on Prince Edward Island. I know it's the code across Canada, but...
It's been a problem both in the States and Canada, and there's been many lawsuits over it if you want to Google it. And every single one of the court cases I have seen, they have won. Because you're making an offer on a property, and then the listing agent's disclosing what the other eight components of the other agent's offers are, and it's unfair to those other people.
100%. So if you were the buyer that submitted an offer, and another buyer put in an offer, say, $5,000 less than yours, and you said, I will pay $10,000 above. Now, a lot of times these escalation clauses want proof that they are, this is what the top offer is. So I don't even know how these agents do this. I just want no part of it.
They do it illegally in most cases. What if I was to write an escalating clause? So what I want to do is I want to buy it, but I want to buy it for $5,000 more than the other escalating clause. Don't do it.
No, don't.
It's not going to work. Yeah. Well, that's enough silliness for today. I think we've had great fun here.
Yes, I think we covered a lot of good topics, and hopefully our listeners are able to...
Bear with us and watch another listen to another episode.
And pull a little bit of information.
Yes, we did a video of the miracle agent on my YouTube channel there years ago. That was pretty entertaining. Thank you very much for listening to our little thing we have going on here, our podcast. Be sure to follow or subscribe. Give us a star rating and some feedback. We greatly appreciate it. And if you have any questions about Prince Edward Island real estate or PEI in general, direct them to Patty. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.